Yes, so Jennifer received her MA in psychology from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in 2016. She also received a graduate certificate in ADA in 2016. She completed her supervision between October 2015 and August 2018 for a total of 1,677 hours under case charges at AVA United. It looks as if she had multiple supervisors across that time, but Carrie was the one to sign off on the total hours, but all of those have been submitted. In reviewing this, I didn't see any issues with this application.
Thank you. Other committee members, any concerns or questions regarding this application? Hearing none, let's move on to applicant number 6. Aisha Weathers, that's Ms. Wilkins.
Yes, Ms. Weathers is submitting some additional information based on a request that we had related to her answering yes, that she has been asked to leave or was under a termination and resigned in lieu of termination. One of the questions that came to the committee's attention was just his not having any documentation or any information related to that termination. She has provided a very lengthy response, I would say, you know, very, very vulnerable response that I think is reflects a lot on a common issue that we're seeing in the field, and that you do have clinicians and you have individuals that are really good at their job at working with individuals on the spectrum or working in another population, then there's additional subsets of training and supervision that comes into play when you're in a leadership role. And it appears in her response that she was placed in a leadership role without contingency to support that leadership role. So for me, I feel confident and comfortable with the response that she provided. I think that if, you know, she were to hear this or read the minutes, because I know she's not in attendance today, I would, you know, obviously from just a peer-to-peer feedback, like to encourage individuals to get additional supervision and consultation around supervisory roles if you are going to take a leadership position, but I am comfortable with moving forward with her application.
Thank you. And I felt similarly when I read it. I did provide a lot of information. And there's no, you know, real criteria for us to say, okay, how much is enough and exactly what. And for me, this was the first time we had asked, I had been a part of reviewing an application and asking for more information when the issue was an employment-related issue. And I was pleased with her response, and I believe she satisfied our request. Any other concerns or questions regarding this response for more information? Hearing none. Let's move her on to the board for recommending for licensure as well. Next applicant is applicant number 7, Chelsea Crosby. Ms. Crosby earned her MED from ASU in curriculum and instruction with an emphasis on applied behavior analysis between May of 2017 and December of 2018. She received 1,592 hours of supervision under 3 different supervisors in 2 different sites. All supervisors were licensed in Arizona at the time. She was certified in March of 2019, and I do not know any concerns with this application, and we recommend it be forwarded to the board for approval. Are there questions or concerns from other committee members? Hearing none. Let's move on to applicant number 8, Lisa Lackey. Dr. Davey, Mr. Miller.
Hi, Lackey from Ford for Lancaster, State Arizona, as a senior analyst. She received her BACB certification way back in November of 2014. She currently has been working and studying in the state of California. And moving forward to essentially have her supervision that was conducted in California and signed off on by he's BCBA of California, so licensure is not an issue. To get to the chase, I really saw no issues with Ms. Lackey's application and would move to have it go forward.
Thank you. Other community members, any concerns or questions of this application? Okay, moving on to applicant number 9, Mariah Pope. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes, Mariah Pope completed her curriculum and instruction degree with Arizona State University in 2018. She was certified as BBRAM analyst in March of 2019. She did get a total just over 1,500 hours from period of September 2017 to December 2018 with two separate supervisors, two separate sites. Both were licensed in Arizona. I have no concerns with this application.
Thank you. Other committee members? Seeing none, I'll ask in final applicant application to review today is from Natalie Tucker, Dr. Lake, BBI.
Yes, so Ms. Tucker received her master's in education from ASU in December of 2012. She is currently a licensed BCBA in the state of Virginia. She received her supervision hours between August of 15 and October of 16. For a total of 1,504 hours, and this was all supervised by Gabrielle Torres, who is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Virginia, and those hours took place at Behavior Basics. I did not note any concerns with this application.
Thank you. Other committee members, any concerns or questions that you may do? Okay, hearing none, that concludes our review of the applicant. It seems that we're recommending all move forward to the full board with one who needs minor application correction. Can I have a motion to approve the motion to forward the applicant to the board?
So moved.
Yeah.
And
get
a second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 But like, we tested it, and it all worked up there. Mine's not working down here.
Motion carries. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item number 6, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding 5-year rule review update. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, did you get a copy of the 5-year rule review?
I did.
Okay, good. It's just not showing on my thumb drive. That's great. Okay, so Jeannie Han is the rules writer that we hired to assist us with moving forward with the five-year rule review report. Now this, again, is not, we're not changing the rules at this point. We're strictly doing a 40,000-foot level five-year review on them and reporting to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council as to where we are with the rules, rules we may need to change, modify, repeal, etc. So that's what this report is covering. And I will be taking it to the board next week, but I wanted your input since the behavior analyst rules are also included in this.
Thank you. I know that there were some items that were highlighted that we know intentional to direct to our attention.
It might have been, I don't recall, I'm sorry, which section was that? That might have been just an internal note for me.
Bottom of page 10, top of page 11, page 12.
Those might have been changes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Those might have just simply been areas that I needed to modify.
Okay. As a summary of the changes over the past 5 years, I think it made sense to me as I read it, and it seemed like a clear summary. Is there any action required by this committee?
No, I just wanted to bring it to your attention and ask for any input if you had any.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Jones? Okay. Thank you very much for the summary.
Thank you.
Next item number 7, meeting member Freeman regarding recusals from Jean Galvin. Ms. Galvin, are you there?
I am. Good morning, committee members. Ms. Jones
good morning.
Good morning. Ms. Jones asked that I just briefly discuss with the committee the issue of recusals and what prompts recusal when you're required to recuse and how it might differ from an abstention. And so we'll just do that very briefly, and then if you have any questions, you can ask me after the presentation or contact me at any time when you have a question of whether you should recuse from a matter. And there's basically two instances under Arizona law that requires a committee or board member to recuse, and that's if you have a true stated conflict of interest or to avoid the appearance of impropriety. And a conflict of interest is generally defined as a pecuniary or proprietary interest in a matter that appears before the committee or the board. And I won't go into the statutory definitions of conflicts of interest because there's a significant conflict of interest, there's a remote interest, but generally if you or your spouse or your parents or your siblings or your children or grandchildren have an interest in a matter before the board, pecuniary or proprietary, then you're required to recuse from the matter. You're required to declare that conflict of interest and recuse from consideration of that matter. And the reason for these requirements is that the statutes are in place so that they remove or limit the possibility that your personal interests or personal influence would affect your official decision in the matter that comes before the board. And it's an attempt to prevent board members, committee members from self-dealing and rendering decisions in matters that come before you in which you have an interest. The reason behind the statutes is that we don't want employees or public officers or committee or board members to have a bias in their performance of the duties that you've been appointed to carry out. So the laws are in place to protect the oath of office that you've taken and the commitment that you've made to whatever public body you're serving on to perform those duties in an unbiased way. And that's why we require individuals to recuse when there is a conflict of interest. A lot of the statutes regarding conflict of interest have a constitutional and a statutory basis, because due process would require that if you have a direct interest in any of the decisions that are before you, you would declare that interest to ensure that the individuals and licensees who appear before you have an unbiased decision maker who is rendering decisions in their case. In determining whether you have that conflict of interest, as I stated earlier, it's not just you, but the statute defines any relatives. And again, those are defined as your spouse, your child, your grandchild, grandchildren, parent, grandparents, brother, or sister. So always consider not just you, but any interest that those relatives may have in the matter that may come before the board. The legislature has determined that an individual who knowingly violates these statutes with respect to a conflict of interest can be held criminally liable for violations of those statutes. Depending on the level of intent, it can either be a felony or a misdemeanor. So you want to be sure that you are always abiding by the statute. Whether to recuse is a personal decision that is made by the committee or the board member, but that decision can be made with input from, you know, from me as the legal counsel to the committee and to the board. We'd be happy anytime to talk with you about the specifics of your concern and help you reach that decision, even though the decision is yours to make. Another consequence of violating one of these statutes with respect to recusal, you would forfeit your public office in addition to any criminal penalties that may be meted out as part of that. So when we stated that there's two reasons to recuse if you have a conflict of interest. The second is if you want to recuse from a matter to avoid the appearance of impropriety. And these are probably the harder cases to consider. If you have a conflict where you have some sort of monetary interest in a case or some sort of other proprietary interest in a case, those are the easier issues. The harder cases may be is if you want to avoid the appearance of impropriety. You don't have a direct financial matter, but there's something that's part of the case that if you were to participate could appear to be improper. And we could all think of, you know, hundreds or thousands of examples of what it could be to be improper. But you want to recuse in order to avoid that appearance of impropriety. Maybe you had a professional relationship with someone before the board that maybe didn't end well, even though you think you could adjudicate the case appropriately and without bias. It still could make the person who is before the board uncomfortable because of that prior relationship. So in those kind of cases, it's just best to avoid any possible appearance of impropriety and recuse. But again, it's a personal decision. As with all boards, simply knowing someone is not the basis for having to recuse yourself. We had an example here earlier, and we've had them before, where you know, the behavior analyst world is very small, and all the practitioners seem to know a number of the other practitioners that doesn't require recusal. But you would look at each individual case, determine whether you have a history with this person, whether it's a negative history, et cetera. And that those are kind of factors that you should take into consideration. But simply knowing someone is not a reason for a recusal. And just finally, a recusal is not the same as an abstention. A recusal, you have no participation in the discussion. You ideally would not even receive the meeting materials, but you have no consideration in the discussion, you don't participate in the discussion, and you have no input into the vote or the final decision making. An extension is where maybe you've gone through the materials, we've heard from the relative parties, maybe there are some witnesses, and for whatever reason you're just not able to make an informed decision that you would be comfortable with. So you would abstain from the final vote. And often you don't know that you're going to abstain until such time after all of the information is considered, and you might decide, I just can't make an informed decision, I can't judge credibility for whatever reason, and so you would abstain from the vote. And so that's different than recusal, so just keep those two terms in mind. That's kind of all I have. It's just kind of a general overview of recusal. Do any of you have any specific questions? Okay. You all have my contact information. If something does come up, at one time or another, I've spoken to almost all of you about a potential or possible recusal, and I would be happy to do that at any time in the future.
Ms. Gallen, thank you. And either Ms. Gallen or Ms. Jones, my question is, have there been practices that we as a committee have been doing that prompted this review of conflict? In other words, we have often made statements that we know this person, but we feel we can be objective. Is that a practice that we should continue, or is that not necessary? Has there been anything that we as a committee has done that prompted this?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, this is Jenna. I try to remind you all have been on the board, on the committee, either a year or 6 months, and when you're brought on, there's a lot of information thrown at you, and I think y'all are doing a good job of disclosing information regarding the recusals or the abstentions, but I'm doing this simply as a reminder process and to try to, keep everybody updated. And, it's been 6 months, so a little refresher is always good, I think.
Oh, I appreciate that. So I'm hearing that we've been doing okay and we can continue to do as we have been. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
And that would be my opinion as well. And if I did feel that there were recusals that were maybe not necessary, or that recusals should have taken place, but they didn't, then I would speak to that individual member and possibly the chair to let them know that maybe in the future give thought to some additional considerations when making the decision whether to recuse. But no,
yes,
it was.
I know you will. I trust you to do that.
Yeah. And it's not a critique. It's just simply an effort to ensure that everybody is complying with the law and to avoid any problems in the future. But I'm with Jen. I have not been witness to anything with respect to anything, recusals or anything else that gives me concern.
Great. Again, thank you very much. Any other members, any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Hearing none, move on to item number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding application review tools development for committee members. Dr. Davis Wilson.
Mr. Chair, at the last meeting, I brought this up as just kind of circling back to previous conversations that we had when the committee was first formed. And I can go either way on it, but essentially, when the committee first started, there were quite a few hiccups in getting through the application review.
One of the conversations that we had at that time, and Dr. Beatty led it definitely made sense to me, was if we're having these hiccups, then, you know, as new committee members join or you know, we our time comes up and then new committee members are coming on, like, how can we also support the application review process? And I think at that time, we decided to put the entire kind of project of the review tools task analysis on hold pending the need to revise the application and then pending the new online application option. I'm finding personally that those that are submitting under the online application, it's pretty cut and dry, like the review isn't super crazy. A couple of things that I think, so on one side I'm like, I don't even know if we want to go back and revisit it, but then on the other side I did note a couple of things, and again this is more looking back historically, one of the things that Dr. Zadie I think had requested was proof of certification by the registry of the BACB registry. And one of the things I noticed in application review today is that without us having, so we can, of the supervisor, I mean, so if we don't have the BACB registry information of the supervisor, we can't attest to whether or not they were qualified supervisors. And so it's those little things that that I think, you know, we started kind of in the early process of requesting that board staff pull that information. And I noticed today that it wasn't pulled for those that had proof of licensure. And the thought that came to mind for me was, well, proof of licensure doesn't necessarily mean they meet supervisor qualifications as defined in the rule, that we would need both pieces of information. So then that takes me back to where kind of tools of what we need to be looking for or a checklist of what we need to be looking for could be beneficial. But I think, by the way, like, obviously today's application reviews went very smoothly. I think we've got a great group, and I'm finding the online ones to be extremely easy to navigate and review. But I just didn't want us to move on without circling back to this project we kind of put on hold at pending this and then forget about it or need it later on down the road.
Dr. B.
I think I would just echo their sentiment. I mean, we kind of put this on hold as we were moving through the online piece of it. And I believe many of the kind of systemic errors we are seeing on the paper applications have subsided. This is maybe the third, maybe the second time we've had so many that were done kind of through the online process. There's still, you know, still some pen and paper ones coming. So I agree, probably pushing this off is, you know, until we can get some more data on common consistent errors that we're finding would be a prudent move. My second comment is again going to echo Dr. Davis Wilson, and that is I still do have the concern that she brought up that with regard to not having a printout from the BACB for a supervisor, we are left kind of in the dark of whether or not they have taken the supervisor modules and have been essentially approved to provide supervision to the ACB applicant. And so I do think that that's one piece of material that if we could encourage board staff to include in the packets would be extremely helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, this is Kathy in the office. I appreciate that direction. I was not aware that you had wanted the BCBA printout for all supervisors, even if they're licensed in another state. I will make sure from now on you receive that.
Thank you, Gabby. And I think it's something we just kind of talked around in circles, so I don't think there was anything by any means not a statement that we weren't getting it and we've asked for it. I think it was just, these are just starting to kind of pop up on us now as we kind of work through the new process. So thank you for working with us.
So that was the certification as a supervisor is one item, but are there others that we should put this on a future agenda to do a thorough review? And I heard Dr. Davies say maybe not right away, but let's not about it. What are your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, I'm in agreement with Dr. Davey that I would like for us, because it is one of those, like, today's application review is the first time I had that, wow, it really is important that we have that BAC being pronounced. And so I think the easier the applications are to read, the more consistent data we're going to have, because like I said, in the beginning when we started this process, the application, I mean, we were just trying to get through what the questions meant and how we interpreted them and whatnot. But because board staff has done an amazing job revising the application, we're kind of past that part, so we can really start looking at what's going to be useful in the review and kind of get some of those data points to then move forward with considering this tool.
Okay. Any other discussion on item number 8? We do not have to take action. We do want to remember to get this, bring it back again and perhaps put it on a future agenda. And we have an immediate solution to the issue of not knowing if supervisors were certified to supervise. Anything else on this item number 8? Okay, thank you. Item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding analysis and review of various BACD verification forms being received for verification of supervised experiences pursuant to R-426-404. Dr. Davis, welcome.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So I wanted to add this to the agenda again as a discussion point. Mostly from my perspective, I'm looking at kind of the burden on board staff or the potential burden on board staff, and then just consistency in how we communicate the variations in the form so that we can ease kind of the review process as well. So a little history of what happened. We had the rule change that allows for staff to turn, or allows for applicants to turn in their experience verification form. So that is the form that gets sent to the BACD. So they can send in the form that gets sent to the BACD, or they can fill out the psychology board form. One other, I think one of the things that came to light in, I don't know, January-ish when we did a request for additional information was that there's still in the field kind of a synonymous use of experience verification form and the verification, the like monthly, well, it was every 2 weeks, but now the monthly supervision like note. And so what ended up happening, which was extremely helpful in the situation that it did happen in, because it allowed for Dr. Davey to present the case and the concerns in that very next follow-up full board meeting, so we didn't have any delay in moving that applicant forward. But we have the experience verification, which covers everything, and then we have the experience supervision form. And so one of the things that concerned me about the two different forms being kind of used interchangeably is the burden on board staff and then the burden on the reviewers for us. And so what I wanted to do is have kind of a conversation of how we can clean up our presentation of expectations for those forms, and then how we can either create, you know, a quick diagram or tool or something for board staff, and when we would move into actually requesting the full supervision form. So again, the way that it stands now is that they can turn in the form created by board staff for the psychology board, or they can turn in the form that they're submitting to BACD. From there, if additional information is needed, then we have the ability, to request those supervision forms as well. But like I said, in the request to get the experience verification form from the VACB, one applicant actually sent in all of her supervision forms, which is a lot of paper, a lot of processing. And what I don't want is that board staff to ask for the wrong thing and end up with a big stack of paperwork that isn't really necessary if we're looking for just that BACB experience form. One last thing, Ms. Jones, thank you so much, or whoever put this together, but thank you so much for understanding exactly kind of what I was saying and for putting together the variations in the form, because this I think is really helpful. You guys will see in the packet that they did provide the different types of forms they're receiving. And so again, for me, I think all the variations in the form can potentially kind of become a board staff burden. And so I wanted to see, one, how board staff felt throughout the committee felt, but three, what we could do to help kind of mitigate some of the confusion of the form.
Yeah, I'm looking at the packet myself, and it is very helpful to me too, so thank you. So shall we hear from board staff?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davis-Wilson, this is Kathy. I put these together. I had asked, I had noticed with Tracy Webb, I think was the applicant that Dr. Davis-Wilson is referring to. She had sent in her supervision forms instead of her experience forms, the BACB ones, and I had noticed that they were different than the others we had received previously. So after that meeting, I did take a moment and ask Dr. Davis-Wilson about it so that I could understand the difference, and I really appreciated what she explained. So when this came up on our agenda, I knew which applications I could pull from to get those so we could see them, and it has been very helpful to me. I do ask them for the BACB experience verification forms. Sometimes, as you can see, they send other forms instead.
Is it possible that, have we ever had a situation where somebody submitted the experience supervision form and not the experience verification form?
I think that was true with Tracy Webb. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at her exact file. I only selected some of her documents because she had sent like 40 pages. But it was sufficient at that time for the board. I think it was the board that approved that application. I would have to look again and see if she did include the experience forms as well as the supervision forms.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Dr. Wilson. No, she did not include the experience form. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I brought this up, is because it was one of those, like, very, very nice of her to do, but she had to scan in all of those, you know, pages, get them all over to the board staff, or staff had to, you know, coordinate all of those pages. And I think that there is a time, and I am aware of a time, a situation a few years ago when the psychologist application review committee was reviewing behavior analysts as well, in which there would be a time when we would request those supervision forms. And in all honesty, I really think in that particular case, her sending the detailed forms that she did were extremely helpful because of the questions that the committee had. So I think that there's a time when we would say, like, hey, we've got your BACD experience forms, which is kind of your overview, but we still have questions about your continued supervision or format of supervision, where we would still then say, you need to send us your supervision form. But in this case, she volunteered her supervision form, did not send her experience form, but we already had the psychology board experience form. So she really didn't need both. We were just trying to get clarification on some inconsistencies. So again, in this case, I do think it was to her favor to send all of that because it did help clarify every question that we had. But I would just hate to get in the habit of expecting that level of documentation, whether it's as the committee, when we're communicating with board staff or what have you. I think for me in my head, I conceptualize like, hey, we might request the BACB form, and then if we have further questions, we do have that other layer of more kind of micro review of their supervision. So I think that's kind of the piece that I just want to make sure that we're consistent on, is the language of which forms we're asking for and the order in which we would go from kind of that high level overview to more specific documentation.
Yeah, I hear you. And can you, or any of my other colleagues, can you, and do you know if it is possible to become certified as a BCBA by only submitting the experience supervision forms and not submitting their experience verification form?
For the BACB certification, Mr. Chair, we have to just send the verification form. The other forms are available for audit. So the BACB, two things with those forms. One is that if they have questions or concerns, they will request the supervision form. Two is they do a random, I don't remember the amount, but they do a random audit where randomly they will select applicants that they will request that information from. So, but in general, it's the experience verification form that's sent unless there is questions.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. And so what I'm getting at is the burden on the applicant. If the applicant already has submitted an experience verification form, and we are clear with them that they can either submit that same form to us or our own experience verification form as a first tier with the initial application, either one of those is fine. But if they submit all of their supervision forms and not one of the summary forms, and it summarizes all of that for them, I for one do not want to go through that application and do the math and add that all up. So what I'm getting at is it seems very reasonable for us to simply verify you can submit this form or that form with your application, and either one would be fine. If we need additional information about your experience, we will request it. Is that kind of what I'm hearing from you?
Yes, Dr. Dixon, that is the way that I view it as well. My question from that would just be for board staff. I know Kathy, looking at them in comparison and the conversations we've had, has been helpful for you. Would it be helpful, or do you need any other tools or kind of quick cheat sheets or anything else to help support this? Or are you comfortable moving forward? Because I agree with you, Dr. Dixon, that would be kind of what we'd be looking for and circumstances under which we would request additional information.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I do understand the difference now between these forms, and so the committee's direction, I will make sure that when they are submitting BACB forms, that it is the experience verification form. And if they submit supervision forms instead, I will go back and say, no, this is not what we need. We need the experience verification form. Is that what you would have me do?
Yeah.
All right. I can go forward with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Any further discussion about this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have one more just additional point of feedback. The BACB in January did change the forms again. The content's the same, but the style and the look of the form is a little different.
Those are available on their website, but I just wanted to let board staff know that if you get something that looks entirely different, the titles are still the same. They're still the supervision form and the experience form, but they have kind of prettied it up and added some color and some logos and things. So just as a FYI that in future reviews, you will likely see a different formatted form. Should have the same title, all the same information is included, but just the FYI, so it doesn't look weird.
Thank you.
So it seems like there could be, what we would be asking for is one of two different forms, one of two different versions of the VACB form, or our form.
Correct.
Thank you. Any other discussion around this item? Thank you for bringing that to our attention, and thank you for including the examples in the packet. It was very helpful. Moving on to item 10. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding revision of application questions that are prone to verify errors. Dr. Davey.
I think this is sort of goes up to two agenda items before. At this particular point, I think this can drop off, but the changes are not seeing the kind of reoccurring errors at this point. We don't have kind of the same data set we had prior to moving to the updating the questions in the online form. So I would be fine to kind of sandwich this into two agenda items before and revisit it in 90 days.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, the form that you're seeing is not actually the online application. That one is still not in effect right now. They still haven't finished changing it. The one you're seeing is actually the PDF that is form fillable. They can type in it. And I think that's why it feels like an online application, but it's really the paper form.
Thank you. And just to be clear, I think it's the modification of the questions that has really made the difference. But I appreciate that. I guess I kind of combine online with the little PDF as well. But I appreciate the distinction that that's still not available.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, just so everybody is aware, they did, the IT department did take down the access to the online BA application. Because we were not able to get it uploaded or get corrected to the current questions. So it is disabled at this point, and the only way the BAs can submit an application is through paper. So that's why your applications are much easier to read and follow, because they are the paper form. So I just wanted to give you an update. It's been a long, as you know, progression and journey about with this whole new e-licensing thing, but we felt it was in the best interest to take the entire application down since we couldn't get a correct version posted.
That makes sense. I'm wondering if we should carry this item number 10 over into a future agenda, or roll it into other items as well, or simply make note if, let's say, for example, the reduction in errors that we've seen with the fillable PDF don't retain, or when we do have a future online application and we start to the errors, we'll know that it's time to revisit this issue. Is that an accurate assumption, or is that shared by the committee members?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. and nice work on the work on the continued revisions on the application. It is making a difference.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Kathy deserves all that credit. She's worked very hard on updating all the forms, and we're very lucky to have her.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Okay, item number 11, new agenda items for future meetings. Does anybody have any items that we need to put on the next or following near future meeting? Okay, hearing none. Again, we're ready for adjournment. And I have a motion to adjourn. Regarding the new agenda for future meetings, I'm sorry. Just a reminder, our next meeting is Monday, July 8th. Motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.